walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Alexandra Crockett, the photographer who's created the book Metal Cats, which features an array of wonderful, often striking images of musicians from the hardcore metal scene with their cats. While Metal Cats is chiefly a photo book, it also at least subtly pursues other agendas, including increasing awareness of gender discrimination and bias, the plight of feral cats, and the staggering number of cats in shelters. We'll discuss all this and more when we speak with Alexandra Crockett in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Mike Shoemate, manager of Pasco County Animal Services, about a pretty severe overcrowding they're experiencing at their shelter, what can be done about it, maybe how you can help. Also later, Name That Animal Tune will be offering as the prize a pair of tickets to see Connor Oberst May 14th at the Beecham Theater in Orlando. Before we proceed any further with the show, though, I do want to talk for a moment about the Animal Coalition of Tampa, ACT, which for years has provided low-cost spay and neuter and other low-cost medical services for animals. You may have heard ACT was attacked over the weekend by an arsonist. I use the word attack advisedly. This criminal not only did considerable damage to the ACT building, fire officials estimated $200,000 in damage overall, but three much-beloved cats there died, Jazz, Boy, and Mama. As you can imagine, Linda and Frank and everyone else at ACT have been devastated by this. These are friends of mine, and even if you've never met them, if you care about animals, they're friends of yours too, and they need our help. I donated right away. I know that a wonderful WMNF volunteer, Bob Sopti, is helping them in a major way, as are many others. So if you're inclined to help, you can visit acttampa.org, and we'll keep you posted on this. I know they have been questioning a suspect, and we'll just keep you posted on details next week's show. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is new music from Lake Street Dive with Rabbit Animal on Talking Animals.
Why did I ever go back home?
That was Lake Street Dive with Rabid Animal, a swinging animal tune to get us started this morning. Let's move now into our chat with Alexandra about her book, Metal Cats, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Alexandra Crockett to Talking Animals. Good morning, Alexandra.
Good morning.
How's it going? Can you hear me okay?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, again, we're unfortunately not in a great cell zone, it sounds like, because it's a little shaky, but hopefully you can move around and make that a little stronger if at all possible. But either way, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I know it's very early your time, and so all the more I appreciate it. And congratulations already in the book. I mean, the publication date is still a couple of weeks off, May 6th, yet it feels to me like the book has already generated tremendous excitement and momentum. How does that compare with your sense of the early response so far to Metal Cats?
Yeah, everything is very surprising and new. Especially because I'm in school, I definitely was not expecting such a big response, I guess. Just taking things one day at a time.
Sure. But I mean, I'm sure on some level it must make sense to you that people have been captivated by sort of the notion, but especially by the images that they've at least had an early look at in one place or another.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the juxtaposition is pretty strong, so certainly people have been talking about that, I think, before there was publicity, so I definitely understand, you know, that there's a dynamic there that people are interested in.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, a huge element of the book's appeal is this kind of juxtaposition or, as you say, or striking intersection of heavy metal musicians and the cats who live with them. And of course, we'll discuss the book in some detail in a moment. But let's first get your side of the book, which involves intersection of heavy metal, cats, and photography. You know, in a show about animals, of course, we got to start with animals first.
Yeah.
So tell me about your own interest in animals. Did you grow up with animals? Were cats kind of a big part of your life growing up? Or
yeah, I did. When I was a very young child, we had a cat named Pumpkin. So that was kind of my first pet. And I've had cats pretty much my whole life. So we've also had a dog in there, Lucy, too. But always there was cats.
Yeah. So you're a cat.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, you're a cat person for sure, it sounds like. And now I gather, you know, perhaps related to that, that at one point you sort of found yourself caring for the cats of some of the musicians that ultimately ended up in the book. But how did that come about?
You mean the connection between the two?
Well, I mean, wasn't there a time where you were sort of looking after cats that belonged to some of these musicians when they were on tour or away for one thing or another?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been doing cat sitting and house sitting for a very long time. I started being in the metal scene when I was about 14, so that was 16 years ago.
Okay.
To date myself.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I saw, you know, the connection between it even before I started specifically cat sitting, just because, I mean, at the time it wasn't like most of my friends who were in the metal scene even had their own place to be having someone cat sit for them. So, yeah, I mean, I do cat sit for a lot of people, though, and usually when I am cat sitting, I do take photos and things like that, so... Yeah, that's been part of the dynamic.
But again, if you got into the metal scene, and if I'm not mistaken, this was sort of in the Seattle area where you were first venturing into becoming a metal fan?
Yeah, I was actually living on an island in the Northwest by Seattle at the time, and then I moved to Seattle to go to undergrad, so I kind of started being in the metal scene on an island.
And would that be Bainbridge Island? By any
yes.
chance? Okay, yeah. All right. That's a great place to be, metal or no metal. That's a beautiful place.
It is beautiful. There's not a whole lot to do as a teenager, but, you know, you make your own entertainment with house shows and kind of forest parties and like that. So.
And, okay, so once you were venturing maybe over further to Seattle or spending more time there, or again, once you settled there to go to college, Is that where you were really kind of more frequently then looking after sort of house sitting and cat sitting?
Yeah. Yeah, I think once, you know, people that I knew actually had places, we were all old enough to be living by ourselves. Yeah, that's kind of when I guess that started happening more.
And so even though you kind of had gotten into it to metal pretty young, I mean, was there still kind of a moment where, even though you were kind of used to that world and the musicians and stuff, where you thought, wow, a lot of metal dudes really, really love cats? I mean, was there sort of a light bulb moment in particular? Or?
You know, I think that because I was so surrounded by musicians, I mean, I'm a musician myself as well, but because I was so surrounded by musicians and people in the metal scene from a very young age, I think it kind of was so gradual that I'm not sure I even noticed.
Alexander, I don't know if you moved or where you went, but unfortunately now the cell connection seems very very shaky.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, that's better. Yeah, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, it just sort of, you know, we kind of lost you there for a moment. But yeah, well, so let me let folks know that might be just tuning in that my guest is Alexandra Crockett. She's a photographer behind the book Metal Cats, featuring images of metal musicians with their cats. If you'd like to ask Alexandra a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Now, some actually longtime listeners to this show, there might not seem quite the striking anomaly, maybe that otherwise could, just because we did an interview a few years ago with Donald Tardy of the metal band Obituary, and he and his girlfriend Heather head up the metal Meow Militia, which is devoted to attending to an enormous number of feral cats, and they're obviously big cat people, you know, beyond that as well. In fact, I think there are some pretty significant overlapping traits amongst metal guys and cats. What would you say some of those sort of shared traits might be?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, the independence factor is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with people who are actually musicians, which not everyone in my book is musicians. Everyone else is, you know, artists, and they work in the community in some way.
Yeah.
But I think the independence factor, just because, you know, people are going on tour often, and you have a pet that is, you know, more willing to just kind of be like, no, it's time for me right now. But I also think kind of the not give a shit attitude is, it's kind of pervasive between the two, so that helps as well.
Yeah, okay, so independence, kind of an indifferent attitude, and I guess that cuts both ways, right? Because I guess compared to, you know, a dog, for example, if a metal musician goes on tour for a long time, that's a whole different kettle of fish in terms of what happens to a dog that would be in that situation, as compared, I suppose, with the cat that have that independence that you mentioned and can find a way to roll with their friend being gone for a stretch.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't really work out so well with dogs. I mean, you really need to be giving them attention throughout the day, whereas a cat can be left to their own devices. And I think, you know, it's not something that's going to, like, wholly upset their entire day to have that happen.
Steeped in this world and you're cat sitting and you're not even all that struck, it sounds like, at any particular point by all the metal musicians having cats. So I guess the sort of obvious question now is, then where did this suddenly seem like a book to you? Where did the idea for doing the book come from?
Yeah, you know, it was actually a roommate of mine, Christine, who was looking through photos that I had taken just years ago. I mean, of my friend Dane and just the guys that I had hung out with, you know, as a teenager. And she was saying, you know, I think this might be a thing. Maybe you should, you know, put a photo book together or something of this. And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess I could do that. So I kind of just ran with it, which is what I do with most things. If I decide an idea is good enough, I just go with it. I ended up, you know, texting about 30 of my metal guy friends and asking, you know, hey, if I do this book that's metal guys with their cats, would you be into it? And I got a really good response, so I just went for it.
So cool. So when was this? How long ago did you get started on this once Christine had kind of suggested there was indeed a book here?
That was about, I want to say, early October 2010.
Okay. Wow. So this has been percolating for a while then.
Yeah, it has been happening for quite a while. So yeah, that's kind of when I put the Facebook page up, and that got a really good response, which was also surprising to me because I kind of didn't realize that it was going to be more widespread than people that I knew personally. And then, you know, going and doing photo shoots, doing benefit shows to try to self-publish. And then finally, in the past, year and a half, actually having a publisher approach me about it. And then, going through the process of actually publishing the book. So
yeah, which is so great. But I mean, I think that goes back to from figuring you were probably going to need to self-publish to being approached by a publisher. It's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is that there really is, there just is an inherent interest in this. I mean, on a bunch of levels. I mean, obviously the visual level is incredibly striking, but it goes well beyond that. So, and it does seem that just already with the publication date is May 6th, but there does seem to be a lot of interest and chatter and stories and things online. And yeah, it just seems to really kind of intrigue people. So just to back up for a little, so after you texted those first 30, though, I mean, because there's obviously, I don't know what the final number of images in the book are, but it's pretty vast. Beyond that first 30, how was it lining up or even contacting and then lining up musicians for the shoots? Was everybody pretty amenable, or were some people a little more skeptical, or how did that work?
I mainly got people who I didn't already know. I mainly got through, referrals, people that I had already photographed would say, hey, my friend in, this or this city would definitely be interested. I'll give you their phone number. And I got a lot of requests actually to be included just from the Facebook page. So, it was not difficult to find. It was actually more difficult to kind of, go through who is going to be someone that I actually can photo shoot, because it had to be on the West Coast, of course, because I'm driving everywhere. But also, just kind of timing-wise, I was working full-time at the time as well. So trying to figure out, where can I go for a few days and just do a bunch of photo shoots as much as possible. I had a couple people who were, I guess you could call skeptical. I mean, I think it's so small compared to how many people that I actually talked to about it. There were maybe two people out of, let's say, 200 or something that were concerned that being photographed with their cat would affect the persona of their band.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So, wow, yeah.
So I didn't photograph them because I thought that was silly. so they're not included.
Yeah. Well, they're lost now. I'm sure now that they see what you did with this, it's like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Because to me, that the thing you just described as their reason for saying, I don't think we want to do it, is precisely what we've already been talking about as part of the sort of cool appeal of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. 200 you mentioned. So, gosh, how many, after all that, did you have to leave out some folks just by sheer space constraints, or?
Well, I had to leave out photo shoots just because I didn't have time. So I ended up doing 115 photo shoots total. I think we ended up including 112 of those in the actual book. So we only really cut just three of them. And that was actually based on the sizing as well as, I mean, I'll just be honest, it's very difficult to photograph moving cats.
Yeah.
So there was a few that were kind of more difficult to actually see that there was a cat. There was like a swoop of color, but not necessarily, any identifying factors there. So those ones were cut because of that. And then the other images that are included, I think there's about, I want to say between 70 and 75 submitted photos that were submitted to me with model releases out of about, at this point, probably 700 submitted photos. So those ones were cut down quite drastically.
But that's, if I follow you, that's almost the reverse of the people we've now established were sort of dopey who were reluctant to be, photographed in your book. It sounds like these are people who said, wow, well, I know you can't get here to do an actual photo shoot with me, but I so much want to participate. I'm going to send you photos of me and my cat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I think, by the way, since we mentioned Donald earlier, I should mention that Donald Hardy is amongst the multitudes in that category. So yeah, I mean, you kind of alluded to it, but one of the things I, of course, wanted to ask about is, you know, what were the sessions like? Pretty challenging in a lot of these cases to shoot those photos with those cats?
It was very challenging and very interesting. I mean, most people have very... Well, they thought, I guess, before I got there that they had very well-behaved cats. And then, of course, there's this strange lady in their house with these kind of alien-looking things that have lights coming off of them. And that did not go over easily. So, for the most part, I mean, I first started out photographing with actual stage lights. And so they're very warm. They warm up really quickly. That was great. But then, of course, as soon as I stopped using those and started using... a different kind of lighting system, I did not have that used transition any longer. There was a lot of, you know, we're going to take a little socialization, building rapport with the animal at the beginning, and then we would kind of do, like, very, very quickly, about 100 photos, and then we'd give the cat a little break, and then we'd do 100 more, and then we'd see if we got anything, and then either I would take more, or I would... you know, say thank you and go on to my next one.
Wow. So Alexandra, as you're explaining that, are you saying that, like, in any given shoot that you might take 100 or 200 images to end up with the one that you would use?
Yes.
Wow.
Correct.
Well, because I was going to say, I mean, I didn't know if it was me or just me, but many of the cats in the book kind of look a little perturbed, frankly, about having their picture taken. And it sounds like, from what you've said, that's sort of verified by what went on at those shoots. But beyond sort of the socialization you mentioned, were there tricks that you kind of developed for making the cats more comfortable or at least more cooperative during the shoots?
I think it helps that I am definitely a cat lady.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when I went to people's houses, their cats were actually pretty comfortable with me easily, even the ones that had animals that normally did not like strangers. I think that helped a lot. A lot of people suggested to me, oh, you should bring cat toys and all these things. That was not actually helpful. So really, I felt like, you know, building rapport with the cat and with the human... because usually they kind of have a similar personality around.
Yeah.
Is that actually the most helpful thing that you can do? Is the most helpful going to look better?
I think, unfortunately, Alexandra, I don't know if you moved or if we're just getting bad luck with the cell, but we seem to have lost you again a little bit on the connection.
Oh. Still in the same place.
Oh, well, okay, and you sound better, so maybe it's just, ghost in the machine, but, so yeah, it sounds like the last thing that was good, I would think, cat toys to get them riled up. I mean, it seemed like the key was to try to do everything you could to make them calm.
Yeah, and I think it really was just kind of sitting with them for a little bit first. Some people, when I got there, they're like, okay, let's do the photo shoot, and I kind of had to be like, actually, let's just talk about the process for a minute, and we'll sit here with the cats, and the cats can sniff my equipment and, you know, play with that. They would jump in my lighting box, and you just let them do that for a little bit so they actually feel like, you know, you're not there to threaten them. You're just doing something innocuous.
Right. Sort of get a little more relaxed around this lady who's got all these weird objects with her and in her hand and stuff. Yeah, so...
exactly.
Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm speaking with Alexandra Karakat, the photographer behind the book Metal Cats, featuring all sorts of images of metal musicians with their cats. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org or texting 813-433-0885. So, Alexandra, okay, so the book comes out in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks from yesterday, I think. And now I understand some of the proceeds from the sale of the book will go to a few no-kill cat shelters. Can you tell me a little bit about this and how that works?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, I have my cut from the book, and I'm planning to put an amount from that, which I don't have a way of knowing even how much I'm getting at this point. So
right. It'll depend on the sales, I assume, right?
Yeah, exactly. So once I can actually come up with a solid amount, you know, some portion of that will go towards no-kill shelters. And I'm actually at this point, since each of my, I'm having book release shows, all of those are going to be donating to particular no-kill shelters as well. So I've posted all of those on the internet pages of each of the events. But I figured, you know, when it comes down to the ones that are from my sales, I think it would be worthwhile to pick someone new even. So I've kind of just been looking around. I would like to have it be to a place that has some sort of connection to the metal community as well. So we'll see what happens there. I'm just still kind of looking around. But,
well, that suggests at least perhaps some organization, some shelter in Tampa, just because, of course, Tampa and Orlando seem to have a pretty solid metal scene, as you know. But
yeah,
so we gotta get a quick lobby in. But anyway, okay, and then I think there's also, and by the way, what is the Facebook page? Is people just search for Metal Dudes, or what's the best way to get to the page where, you know, a lot of this information would be in, and some of the images obviously are there as well.
Yeah, you actually search for Metal Dudes Cat's Book, because that was the name that I went under before I got a publisher.
Okay, so it's Metal Dudes Cat Book. Just put that in the search.
Metal Dudes Cat Book, so they're both plural.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Okay, great, because that's a great page, and there's a lot of the information and of course, about the book, but some of these things coming up, including that another sort of organization or way that things are being benefited is there's a release party in New York City on May 17th, which will raise funds for the no-kill rescue Bobby and the Strays. Tell us about Bobby and the Strays and how you selected them.
Well, so actually, my publicist, Barianne, is very active in the animal welfare community. So she was working for Paws PR and a couple other places. And she knows a few people that work there that are also, you know, in relation to the metal scene. So she brought it up to me, like, hey, this place might look like a good one for us to be donating to. And I looked at their website, and she seemed to be totally correct. So I just approved it.
Yeah, it looks cool. I hadn't been familiar with it until I saw that's where the release party was going to be held. And yeah, it looks like a long-established and really well-run organization. So good for you. So I trust that folks can buy, or at least for the moment now, pre-order Metal Cats wherever they would normally purchase their books. Is that correct?
I believe so. I know that it's available on Amazon. I actually have recently requested a list of places where people can physically get a copy, but I haven't received that from my publisher yet.
Okay.
So,
but probably safe to say if it's at Amazon, there's probably, you know, most of the at least the usual places that people do get their books is or will be certainly by May 6th, if not a little bit beyond.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, again, the book's not really out, but a lot of people have seen it or at least had seen parts of it, seen photos, images from it, of course. So with that in mind, I mean, have you kind of fielded any static about the book being all males? Well, at least on the musician side, not necessarily the cat side. But, I mean, in a way, doesn't it almost have to be kind of mostly, if not exclusively, male, given sort of the premise of it? But I don't know, people being what they are, I'm going to guess some people might have had saying, hey, how come there's no women included in this?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are people, you know, who are also transgender in the book. It's pretty much anyone who's male identified. So the reason for that is because I felt that there was a stronger juxtaposition between the two. And absolutely throughout the entire process, you know, some of these people's girlfriends or partners or women that I was around that were, you know, kind of along for the ride in the process, all were asking me, you know, well, how come I can't be in it? And when are you going to do a book with the girls? And I actually do plan to do a book that includes women as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of like on the horizon, I guess, at this point. But I didn't want to muddle the concept. So I really wanted to stay, you know, guys in the metal scene with their cats because it had that particular juxtaposition. And I thought including too many outliers, it starts to not have such a strong concept anymore.
Sure.
So I really stuck with it.
All right. So there's some other as yet to be named or even maybe fully determined female-oriented book on the horizon, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'll be working with Barianne, my publicist, and also Nina, my publisher's publicist, on that project when it begins.
great. Well, more immediately, what's coming up? You obviously the book's coming out. Now, I think if I'm not mistaken, amidst all this, you kind of alluded to, but more specifically, am I right that you're in the midst of pursuing a doctorate right now?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
And what sort of degree is the doctorate in?
It's in clinical psychology with a kind of extra emphasis on social justice and advocating.
Wow. Okay. That's got to keep you pretty busy with all these other things that I'm sure are going to escalate as we get closer to and beyond the publication date. Wow, that must be a pretty full day right now.
It is quite insane. I work at a couple of community centers doing facilitated therapy with foster kids and, you know, research on the side with one of my professors and all of these things. So I have become a master multitasker, I guess I'd say.
I'm sure. You probably absolutely have to be or else. Yeah. So
I think I would drown if I wasn't. So.
For sure. Cool. Well, good for you. Well, again, we really, really enjoy the book. And again, I've already gotten letting people know that the show is coming up and presenting a few of the images. People really seem to be responding to those already. Really cool. This is we've been speaking with Alexandra Crockett. The book is Metal Cats, comes out officially May 6th. Find out more about the book and see some images and find out other things about shelters being helped and et cetera. You can just search on Facebook for Metal Dudes Cats Book. So, Alexandra, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
All right, thank you. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. In just a few minutes, we'll speak briefly with Mike Shumate, manager of Pasco County Animal Services, about their shelter, which is currently just brimming to capacity and beyond with animals. Right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Here's a piece that arguably links with Mike Shumate, with Alexandra Crockett, and with last week's guest, Scott Trebatusky. Here's part of a piece called No Kill Animal Shelter from Michael Ian Black on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
It's my son's birthday, and he decided he wanted a cat for his birthday. And I didn't want a cat, because we had had another pet. My son had a hamster, and the hamster did what hamsters do. It died. And that was traumatic for the kids, you know what I mean? And I didn't want to go through that again with another pet. You know, cats live 20 years. Well, you know, hey, what killed the cat, you guys? What killed the cat? Curiosity? No. Feline leukemia. So this last weekend, my wife and I went to the no-kill animal shelter to adopt a cat. I know, it was adorable. And so we walk into the cat room, and it's a tiny room. You know, it's probably, you know, like the middle part of this stage, like to here. And it's just filled with cats, you know, just cats everywhere. Like, you know, you can't swing a dead cat in this place. Not that there's dead cats. It's a no-kill animal shelter, you guys. And I don't know how to pick a cat, you know, I don't know. And then, so I'm like looking around, and then I see this cat. And the cat is sitting on his little rug furniture, and we kind of meet eyes, and then he kind of goes like this. You know, and then he's like this. His little paw, come here. And I go, okay. You know, and so I sort of step over some cats to get to him. And he's like, hi. And I go, hi. And he starts doing this. Like that. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, stroking his head, you know, a little bit. And he's going, rrr. You know, it's adorable, you know. And then he kind of rolls over on his back like this. And I'm like, you know, when we're bonding. And then out of nowhere, he does this. And scratches the out of my hand. So I adopted that cat. Specifically, so I could take it to a different animal shelter that doesn't have a no-kill animal policy.
All right. That was Michael Ian Black with part of a piece called No Kill Animal Shelter, taken from his album. Very famous. Moving now to hear a bit about the shelter operated by Pasco County Animal Services. Let's welcome the manager there, Mike Shoemake. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Duncan. How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So about 2 weeks ago at the radio station here, we received a press release with the heading, Pasco County Animal Services is over capacity. Now, even with all the, you know, the ongoing talk about pet overpopulation, the struggle to get enough animals adopted, you know, this seemed pretty striking. So tell me a little bit about what's going on in, you know, in the shelter there.
Well, it's always a challenge with municipal shelters. You know, it's always a constant inflow of animals coming in, whether they're coming in from the field or owner surrenders or people bringing in strays. That part of the equation is always there. The other side of the equation is how quickly can we get them back out to, you know, to good families that will care for them and take care of them, or how quickly can we get them out to rescue groups or foster care. And sometimes it's that numbers game. You're trying to balance that all the time. And I think lately we just had more inflow than we had outcome, and that created a sort of a bottleneck here at the shelter, and that's why we kind of put the plea out to the public saying, come on out and get some of these great dogs.
Specifically, what kind of numbers are we talking about? I mean, how many animals are there right now? And you know, what's a typical number of adoptions in a given week that may have sort of dipped recently to create the bottleneck, as you put it?
Okay. Yeah, for us, our capacity of care, which is basically how many animals we can really care for here at the shelter, and that's a combination of staffing and available cages and things, is usually about 150. We're currently in a Save 90% program. It's sort of Pasco County's version of the no-kill movement.
Sure.
And we've been pretty successful in the last couple years moving that number closer to 90%. But what that does is that allows us to hold a few more animals. The Board of County Commissioners was really behind this, and they wanted to give us an opportunity to save as many animals as possible. So we kind of pushed that capacity of care to about 180. And primarily we thought, hey, we can get more animals, hold them, get them out. But lately, you know, when you split that number, 150 capacity of care, it's only so many dogs, 100 dogs and 50 cats that we can house. Currently, we've had as many as about 153 dogs. So it really pushes the number. And if you don't have the cages, you know, you've got to make some quick decisions to get the animals out.
Sure.
We try to do everything we can. We've got about 162 rescue groups that we can call on. We've got the adopters that we hope will continue to come out and look at the animals. We've even got a mobile adoption vehicle, which was donated to us by the Friends of Animal Services, which is a 501c3 group that takes a lot of donations and provides us support for things.
And Mike, sorry to interrupt, but I'd almost be remiss if I didn't ask you to
sure.
tell us the name of that adoption vehicle.
It's called the Wagon Tail.
There you go.
Yep.
Come on.
Yeah. And it's out about every Saturday. We've had it out since the day we got it. It's been out with the exception of a few weekends when we've had a big shelter event. We needed all hands on deck here. We've got great volunteers that help us out with that, and we've got staff that take it out. So far, we've had it out about 2 months, and we've been able to adopt out probably about 8 animals so far. Now, that may not sound like a lot of animals, but I think the novelty of the whole concept is catching on. And the one good thing about it is when they provided us the vehicle, it's been wrapped with all of our information and great-looking little pictures and stuff. So when that thing goes down the road, it's getting our shelter great exposure.
That's fantastic. So
yeah.
Sounds like pretty much every Saturday at summer. Where will it be this Saturday, Mike?
Well, this Saturday we're going to be doing a joint program with Parks and Recs, and that's going to be a big event. So.
And where is that specifically? Where would people, if they're hearing this and said, "Hey, I'd like to maybe go see about adding a dog to the family, and I definitely want to go check out the wagon tail."
Okay. Actually, you know, if we could get them here at the shelter,
yeah,
it would be even better.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, you know, we definitely want to get them here at the shelter, you know, get folks to come out and look at all the adoptable animals we have. That's just going to be a big help for us getting
so,
them out.
So for people for, you know, haven't been yet, and I emphasize yet because I know now they're going to be eager to get out there. What is the address of the shelter?
The address of the shelter is 19640, and it's Dog Patch Lane, and that's off of Lake Patience Road. We're pretty much located behind the Oakstead subdivision off of 54 and right behind Oakstead Elementary School. You know, that's one of the biggest challenges for us is, you know, every time we go out, we meet folks that say, well, I didn't even know you were a shelter. We had a shelter. Where's that at? You know, getting the word out is really important for us.
For sure. So along those lines, Mike, is there a specific website or possibly even a Facebook page as well where people could go to either find out more or maybe if there's pictures of some of the available dogs that are living with you at the moment?
Yeah, they can go to PASCOCountyFL.net/PAS, Pasco Animal Services.
Okay.
So it's PAS, and they can go right there. And on our website, you can get the complete schedule of the wagon tail. You can look at other events and specials that we have. We run a lot of specials to get these dogs and cats adopted out, and also information that the community may need to know.
Okay, good. You know, because I was going to ask you about that, because the first references you made were both just strictly to dogs, so I wasn't sure to what extent cats were part of this picture, but I figured they had to be. But
You mentioned. I mentioned earlier it's always a numbers game.
Yeah.
Right now we've dropped the number on the dogs here at the shelter because folks have been responding to our pleas,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. But now the cats have started to go up. So
yeah.
You know, it's always a balance, but we can always get folks out. And, Duncan, I want to go back to the mobile adoption vehicle, the wagon tail.
Sure.
It will be with the Parks and Recs at Cruise Lake Wilderness Park this Saturday. They're doing a big Earth Day event.
Okay.
And people can access that event just by looking at the Parks and Recs website on the county website as well.
Okay, so it sounds like really for most informational needs, you start off by going to PASCOCountyFL.net.
Yep.
And then for the animal services, it's /PAS, and otherwise it's the Park and Recs part of that website to find out about this Saturday's event.
Yep, that's right.
Great, Mike. Well, we hope that we'll spur some people to head out to the shelter, to head out to the event on Saturday and the wagon tail and add some animals to their home and help free up some space over there at the shelter.
We sure hope so. And thank you so much, Duncan.
All right. Thanks for joining us today, Mike.
All right. Appreciate it.
Likewise.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Connor Oberst May 14th. Beecham Theater in Orlando. We'll get to that in a few moments here, but want to get to some animal news and announcements first. Starting with, I heard from Don Goldstein, the great greyhound advocate we had on the show a couple weeks back. He sent me an email this morning. I'm just going to read it, actually, because it's really good information, even if the outcome isn't good. But, I mean, his report is very good. So I want to make sure you know what happened in the Florida Senate yesterday. I went up to Tallahassee Monday and stayed to help Carrie Thiel and Kate McFaul with talking to the members of the Appropriations Committee in advance of the meeting yesterday. After working till about 10 p.m. Monday evening, we were sure we had the votes to pass both Greyhound Injury Reporting, SB 742, and the decoupling amendment to the bill. I stayed over and attending the meeting all day yesterday. Unfortunately, the amendment was ruled out of order on a point of order from Senator Latvala. Therefore, it was not considered. Injury reporting was passed easily, 12-4, and will go to the floor of the Senate. Obviously, what that means is decoupling stalled out. So we may have a brief chat with Don next week and just kind of see what that likely means and when that could be revisited. So anyway, I appreciate his sending us that report. Let's see, coming up locally here, this Saturday, April 26th, Florida Voices for Animals is staging a protest tied to World Laboratory Animal Liberation Week. So anyway, there is animal experimentation going on at the University of South Florida. And so they are, as part of that week-long event. They're going to be protesting from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the USF Health Center. I'm Bruce B. Downs, and you're invited to join that protest. And again, there'll be a Bruce B. Downs in West Holly Drive in front of USF Health Center. So make your own sign, come on down, and join them if you are like. Looking ahead a little bit, there's a yard sale fundraiser for nonprofit called South Shore Felines. It's going to be held Saturday, May 3rd from 8 a.m. through 5 p.m. at the Sunoco Tampa office parking lot. That's 203 South Falkenberg Road in Brandon. South Shore Felines holds food drives in order to feed pets of low-income residents and community cats managed by caregivers. Any purchases made at the yard sale will go 100% will go to South Shore Felines. So we'll tell you more about that in the next week or so as well. Found this interesting on my side of the state, Palm Beach Post. When police dogs can no longer chase suspects, sniff out drugs, or track lost children, most retire without the benefits that came with being a canine officer. Free veterinary care to cover the cost of the wounds and injuries sustained during careers full of tackles, jumps, kicks, and even gunshot and knife wounds. Their veterinary bills then became the responsibility of their human partners, who often owe their own unbroken bones, intact limbs, and lives to their four-legged parent. A patrol dog is called to go put himself in harm's way so I don't have to, said canine Sergeant John Newcomb of the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. They're going up and over fences, they're jumping, etc. So there is a movement afoot to change that, and it's the require the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to contact with a nonprofit organization to provide a retired police dog up to $1,500 a year to offset medical costs, cover expenses including wellness exams, vaccines, flea and heartworm treatments, etc. So seems like a very good idea. And lastly here, two things related to horse carriages in New York, and at least one related to Liam Neeson. You know, the kind of the big honcho of the editorial page of the New York Times has sort of blasted Bill de Blasio's efforts to end horse-drawn carriage rides. And then it turns out there's a family tie to horses and horse carriages that Mr. Rosenthal neglected to divulge. So that's interesting. And meanwhile, animal rights activists did picket over the weekend at Liam Neeson's home. Neeson, as you probably know, has been very vocal in his support of the carriage horse industry, so that's what prompted that protest. So I think that's all we really have time for today with Animal News and Us. We'll get into more next week. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, though we do encourage you to become one, right? And there'll be a prize. A pair of tickets to see Connor Oberst May 14th at the Beecham Theater in Orlando. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, well, kind of a giveaway there once or twice, but either way, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday with another edition. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. I'll subscribe to our newsletter to find out more about our guests a little bit beforehand, a few days beforehand, and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. All right, so stay tuned for Alternative Radio. The NPR News is next, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 a.m. I'm Talking Animals. Thanks.